This episode is brought to you by Pixel 2 Editions, a full-service fine art printing company. More about them later. Hello and welcome to In the Art Scene podcast, an art podcast that has it all. I'm your host, Galina Marquez, and I invite fascinating people to talk about their personal creative journeys, success stories, and inspiration. We talk about art business and marketing, how to find your creative voice, and all the new trends in the art world, like NFT, AI, and such. Join me and my guest for today's conversation. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to In the Art Scene podcast. And you're going to be laughing at me because I, with my mom's brain, we just had like 20 minutes awesome conversation with my today's guest before we realized that we were not recording. Anyway, I'm having another amazing guest today. Her name is Sylvia Becker-Hill. She is a fellow San Diego artist, a certified intentional creativity teacher, a highly sought after executive coach, so with 25 plus years business background, and she is successfully merging two practices together, and that's something that when I learned about what she's doing, it blew my mind, and her art is absolutely amazing to look at. And well, anyway, let's just give the word to her to introduce herself, and hopefully this is going to be as good as the first time.
Okay, you have to judge that, my dear.
But we'll catch up, don't worry.
Okay, so shall I talk first about the merger of my beloved two things?
Sure, yes. Let's do it all over again, and then we'll get back to your upbringing.
Yeah, so I'm, as you hear already, beloved listener, from my accent, I'm originally from Germany, and I became an executive coach as one of the very first German coaches to be one in 1997. So for over 25 years now, I'm coaching mainly first men, later women, because at the time in Germany, executives were mainly men. And then later, thank God, women were conquering the corporate world. And so I specialized later in women's empowerment, helping women leaders break through the glass ceilings first of corporations, till I discovered that for fulfillment, work-life balance, my beloved women leaders, they had to break through the glass ceilings inside themselves, inside their own brain, between their own ears, I like to say. And so I'm doing this now for over 25 years. And there was one thing again and again showing up in my practice, which started to bother me, which is that we humans, we want to change, but subconsciously we resist change. And there's a strong force literally in us to pull us back, to make us regress into old ways of being and habits. So some coaching processes are tough. My clients are literally, with my help, breaking through, having their results. And then a few months or even years later, we encounter them or reach out and ask them, hey, how are you doing? And sadly, the number of clients who then sometimes even embarrassingly or ashamed said, oh, Sylvia, it was so amazing the work with you, but life happened. And then I get this story why suddenly things we worked so hard for them, they were regressing. And that frustrated me. And so I had to work through my own self-doubt. Is my coaching not good enough? Am I not powerful enough? What's going on here? Till I found first the science of the brain, neuroscience, to really understand the counterplay of the subconscious and conscious mind. So I was doing a lot of research to find a tool which helped me help my clients to overcome these change resistance, these change inertia, so that they don't only produce results for a few months, rather transform themselves in a lasting way, so that their brains get literally rewired in a hardwired way long term. For good. So when they coach with me, they get to where they want to be, they are transformed, that stays. And in that process, I spent a ton of money on different certifications, from NLP or transactional analysis, emotional freedom technique known as tapping, all wonderful. And nothing yet went for me deep enough working on all levels where how we exist. We are not just mindset. We are not just a heart set. We are not just emotions, emotional intelligence. We are not just ancestry, inherited stuff. We are not just energy. We are all of that. So I was looking to find something which works on all these levels of existence. And then the pandemic hit. And the gift in all the horror of the pandemic for me was the lockdown phase. My corporate business was on a hold because most of my corporate clients had cut all their budgets for corporate normal leadership training, team development, all these things I had been doing for years, which financed my life, all stopped. I found my art mentor, Shaila Sophia, in Sonoma, California, and got certified in her philosophy called intentional creativity. Boom! That was it. Not only took she the lid off my creative painting self, and I became literally in summer of 2020, art selling professional artist with my own wearable art fashion line and prints. I was then combining out of my own creativity, coaching with intentional creativity by using art to elicit literally from my coaching clients in every session their before and after in the form of shapes, colors, and all these details, because our subconscious mind, the language of our soul, is colors, shapes, and forms, and energy and vibration. So long story short, I paint now at the end of coaching processes a painting which captures the essence of my client's transformation, the before and the after. And my clients have now paintings in their office, in their hallway, living room, and by constantly seeing it, passing it, even subconsciously, they have a visible, tangible, sometimes, I mean, paint when it's fresh, it smells. It's a multi-sensory reminder of what they went through in the coaching. And not only a reminder as a visual reinforcement, it's even more important because my paintings, as you have witnessed from our shared exhibition, they radiate the frequency of the process. Because while I paint, I go literally in me, using my body as a resonance instrument, emotionally through the process, and that energy gets radiated. So the painting captures the transformation and is for my clients now creating a feedback loop for their brain. Their brain sees the tangible proof that they have changed. So my clients now feel much more confident. They own their own transformation more. It's not that I, the coach, did it. No, they did it. And the painting becomes a tangible proof of their transformation. And boom. Sustainability of the coaching processes is through the roof, zero regression. It's just that they live what they have transformed now in a sustainable, long-term way, because the art captures it and reminds them every day of their success, their empowerment. It's proof of their capability to change. So all the change inertia I was fighting as a coach years before within my clients, it's completely gone. And as an added bonus, I love that it's also beauty. The art brings beauty to the coaching process, which normally most people wouldn't consider beauty. Where is beauty in the coaching process? But now the beauty literally for others to see hangs in my clients' spaces. And I also love the stories I hear now because these paintings trigger conversations. Obviously, my clients are not living in caves alone. Other people, family members, or if they hang them in their hallways, in their the headquarters, in their company's office spaces sometimes, they trigger conversations about the transformation. So the art triggers a rippling out effect, which my clients and I, we have not anticipated. We didn't know when we produce what we are producing. But that ripple out effect leads to even more positive effects and results of their transformation. It's amazing. I'm so delighted and happy. It's a huge gift for me and my clients.
is fascinating. And yeah, I can see how your paintings are so vibrant that I can totally see them sparking the conversation. And then it will become another reinforcement for your clients as they're talking about their experience with you. It's just amazing. And again, like as I mentioned, you were talking about all the things that I'm geeking. Neuroscience, psychology, art. It's like just, it's, that's totally my pond. I really love it.
Yeah. And for me, I can't separate these things. Yeah. In my brain, my heart, my body, all this is coming together. And that is one of the challenges I have, because when people ask me, what is it what you do? Or what is it what you are? Saying I'm an artist is not really true. If I say I'm an executive coach, it's not really true, because I have also a publishing house. I'm a keynoter. I'm an entertainer on stages. I write my own best-selling books. I do so many different creative things and have so many different services that someone called me a multi-potentialite. It's the business aspect of my business, the marketing of my business is still a huge challenge for me because it's so complex. Yeah, I mean, it's overwhelming. I overwhelm myself with my ever-vision creativity. So I see it in the eyes of people when they get to know all that. Their eyes glaze over and they're saying, really? You do all that? When do you sleep? Yeah. So for me, the key is I stay in flow. For me, I have zero conflicts in my life or in me. It's just a flow. And one day I write more, the next day I paint, the next day I have one Zoom call after the next. It's just different expressions. I mean, a garden doesn't have only one flower. It has trees and flowers and bush and weed and all the different things. So I love my ever-visioned different forms of creativity, and I am still in the process to figuring out how to communicate it how to communicate it in such a way that it doesn't overwhelm or shock people, and that they understand and see what is the benefit for them in that. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. I knew that about you. You're totally a multifaceted, multi-talented person. And I kind of had the same question, how many hours in a day do you have for all of that? But were you always creative? Were you creative as a child?
Yes, I was always creative. As a child, I grew up in Germany as a single child with parents who were quite late when they had me. My mother was nearly 40, my dad in his mid-late 40s, which statistically at the time in the 60s, that was late for becoming first-time parents. And my mother's parents lived with us, so my grandparents. So all four were quite old adults. They all four had horrendous stories of refugee time during the Second World War. So they, obviously, as a child, I didn't know that they had PTSD. And when you grow up as a baby in this environment, it impacts you, which all are things I figured out and really fully understood later in my 40s. But as a child, I lived in this German house with well-engineered windows and thick walls and shutters which went down automatically every evening.
Western Germany or Eastern Germany?
It was Western Germany at the time, Düsseldorf, the capital of Nordrhein-Westphalia. And the house was quite dark because my father always ran through the house turning off the lights to save energy. Yeah, and, you know, green thinking was in the 70s was just standard in Germany. So I lived in this kind of, it sounds judgmental, but I don't mean it judgmental. It was just how I felt. I felt and lived in a bubble of doom. Yeah, of darkness, without having even words for that, because my grandmother was very bitter because of, you know, everything she lost in the horrors of the war. My mother was a very anxious woman who struggled her whole life with either anxieties or depression. My father was a sweet man, but sadly lived with the identity belief that he's just the asshole of the family with super low self-esteem. So I became the sunshine of the family. They called me that. You are the sunshine of our life. And so I became super creative in all sorts of ways of mediating conflicts as a little girl between the four adults.
That's too much responsibility for a little child. Oh my God.
It was, now looking back, I can say it was horrible, but as a child, when you don't know anything different. So for me, it was normal to play by myself. I had no siblings and also not a lot of friends. So I developed a huge imagination. We had a beautiful, gorgeous big garden. So my garden became my big world. My father and I, we watched a lot of TV. So Star Trek at the time was our favorite thing. Spock, I worked long to be able in front of a mirror to raise my eyebrows like Spock and lift up my hand in the Vulcan peace greeting. So I developed this imagination of different worlds. I lived sci-fis and crazy stuff in that garden every day. I started drawing and painting at a very early age. My mother gave me because she loved it. But the war didn't allow, but she loved to paint. She was literally talented, which I never really felt that much in from a technical perspective that I had talent. But my mother encouraged me by giving me watercolors, crayons, pencils. So I had all these creative crafting material. So the whole day I was doodling, drawing, writing before I could really write, like just crickle crackling in little booklets. I had magic books with crickle crackle doodling in them, where I maybe even pressed leaves and flowers from the garden, and I built huts in the garden with everything I could find, sticks and carton or old chairs, old furniture. They were my little caves and castles where I retreated to protect myself, because without knowing at the time, fear was just the kind of undercurrent of our life. Fear of the unknown, fear of, oh my gosh, the biggest sentence was, what will the neighbors think? Yeah, whatever you did, it was always then the... What will the neighbors think? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. My grandma was that way too. Yeah.
So now I understand it all with deep compassion. At the time, I was just as a child reacting, trying to do my best to be the sunshine of everyone, smiling constantly, even if I didn't feel this way. And creativity was my door to literally an alternative universe, to get out of this bubble of doom I felt suffocating in, and live an alternative life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. And for a lot of children in similar situations, I think creativity is the escape route almost. Yeah, and I know that in your work and in that charity exhibition that you mentioned earlier, you had a wonderful speech, and you talked about generational trauma and how you work through this on your personal level, and also you bring it into your coaching as well. So if you can talk about that a little bit, that would be awesome.
Yeah, so in the danger of maybe sounding a bit woo here, which I, you know, in California, it's so normal.
Totally fine. So, it's the right podcast for that.
Yeah, so for some things, I don't have full proof. Yeah, I'm not a scientist. I mean, if I would have the ability to triple my days, I would love to be a scientist with a real laboratory here at a local university in the neuroscience department. So I don't have for everything I'm going to say real scientific proof, but yet my brain is very scientific, so I'm not saying the following from a woo-woo context. So for me, it's very clear that energetically, through osmosis, I took on a lot of trauma and PTSD from my parents and my grandparents without being consciously aware of that. I had two dreams most of my life. And one was always black and white, of a woman with a young girl sitting on some kind of bench in an ugly, dark, weird space where everything was shaking. I know now after decades later, and this as a side note, in Germany, most Germans after the Second World War, they didn't speak about their experiences. My parents never spoke about the war with me, and my grandparents neither. I learned about it through other relatives. And in my 40s, the brother of my mother, before he died, he took it on to write down his biography and collect old papers, like proof of the family history. And my mother was asked by him to write a chapter for that book. So my mother wrote 7 pages about her life, and in that a bit also about her war. And I got to read that book. The book was just printed privately at a, you know, at a local store 4 times. Mm-hmm. So my uncle and his wife, my mother and one of his children and I, we have each one of these 4 books. And through that book, I learned literally in my 40s about some of the horrors. So my point is there are a lot of things going on which are not logic. I was dreaming, which for years I didn't know what it was, because it was a nightmare. It was a dream. I woke up sweating or with my heart beating out of my chest of this mother daughter in a room, and everything is shaking and loud and dust is coming down, etc. I realized later it was a memory from my mother being the girl in that dream and her mother being in a bunker during the bomber attacks during the Second World War. I'm born 1967, yeah, over 20 years after the end of the Second World War. I've never been told anything about it. And I also am sure that I didn't watch any movie where exactly that scene might have been in it and got stuck in my brain. So, and I dreamt this dream again and again, probably, let's say, 1 or 2 times a month for decades. And then in my 40s, learning about epigenetic PTSD, and at the time I used emotional freedom technique to work through the things I discovered in me. On my own anxiety, but then even I also am trained in systemic constellation and family constellation after Hellinger, where you can do as a proxy, do healing work in your body on behalf of someone in your family line. So my grandmother was already dead at the time, or both of my grandparents, but my parents were still alive. So I did healing in my body, in my system, on their behalf as well. And I'd never told them. And I could see that in their lives, things positively changed, like a relaxation where their relationships with their neighbors softened and more peace was possible. And things in my father's family side, he was married before and there were conflicts. They were suddenly ready to be forgiven and healing. So it is possible through different methods to heal what we inherit. It's not only genetically, but also through osmosis, by just being as a young child. As babies, our brain is like a sponge, literally. We suck in everything, all energies, all beliefs, all conversations, everything into our subconscious mind. We don't have yet language and words to dissect it and digest it and sort it. So after I did 1 tapping session on my on the PTSD from the Second World War, without thinking about the dream, I didn't work consciously on the dream, but I worked on the anxiety in me, which was inherited. 1 tapping session of, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes, and a lot of crying around it, yeah, for maybe an hour. And I never had that dream again. Never. And I was in my 40s and I had that dream as long as I could remember. So for me, that's transformation. That is going deep enough and healing something on enough reality level. So mentally, emotionally, and energetically and physically, and in my cells epigenetically, so that it just, it disappears. It stopped. Boom.
Yeah, that's right. Fascinating. I actually had a similar experience. I was working with my therapist. We were doing EMDR technique, which the rapid eye movement desensitization on some of the childhood things that happened to me that I don't even have conscious memory of. So that was kind of the way for us to access that information. And it was working, and we were doing it for several months. And then pandemic happened, and I wasn't seeing my therapist anymore. And then at some point, we were working online on Zoom. It was in a conversational paradigm as we did before the MDR. And then I was bringing it up, like, can we please, because we didn't reach that conclusion yet. I really want to do that. She's like, well, through the screen, it's really not working, but we can try to do tapping. And we did the butterfly tapping.
Yes.
And exactly, like, first time we did this, I like cried like crazy. I had this experience that, you know, if EMDR was working with the eye movement, that was like tenfold. And then literally the next session of tapping, that was the conclusion of the whole, like, the whole a year of doing this. So yeah, it's amazing. It's really amazing.
Yeah. So the good message here for our beloved listener is, we have all the power to heal, integrate, forgive, change, let go to a degree which is way beyond what our conscious mind still believes.
Yeah, absolutely. So well, that is an amazing work that you have done with yourself. And I know that you're bringing a lot of that into your sessions with your clients, which is amazing, because, you know, when you think about executive coaching, thinking about the business aspect is just, you know, half of the deal, right? you have to work on a very personal level, because that affects everything and the relationship and how business is going, because, you know, a lot of the business is relationships, right? And a lot of it is actually relationships with yourself.
Yes. And can I jump in?
Yeah, of course.
So I have this strong conviction that happy leaders are better leaders.
Absolutely.
Because I believe when we are still stuck in our childhood wound or trauma, we have created certain beliefs to protect our inner child. And then we have maybe a 56-year-old CEO, man or woman, doesn't matter which gender, not healed, not happy, making decisions impacting thousands of employees around the world, budgets of multiple millions of dollars. And I believe also, when I look into the political world right now, the war in Ukraine is so hard, heavy on my heart. I know happy leaders don't start wars.
Absolutely.
Happy leaders don't kill one another. Happy leaders, let's say in a pharmaceutical industry, wouldn't throw a product onto the market where they know that a high percentage, there are documentaries, by the way, out on Netflix about specific products, especially sadly for women, where the company's executives were interviewed, where they know that a high percentage of patients using these kind of artificial implants of a metal fabric for fixing organs, mm-hmm. will have horrible side effects, and they take that into account. It's like, yeah, so many percent, and I forgot the exact numbers. Yeah, we give them each $70,000, $150,000 for their pain, and but the revenue of that product is so much bigger than the collateral damage on. So my point is, and this is just one example in one industry. Every industry has these kind of leadership decision making. I believe this horrendous capitalistic priorities, profit over people, would fade away if we had more healed leaders in top positions, corporate, political, nonprofit, everywhere. And so for me, this is, I'm honest about it. For me, my business is not just to make a living. Yes, I need to make more money, especially now with my second son wanting to go to college next year. And so, yes, of course, I need to make a living. And yet I want to make also a difference in the world. And what I celebrate is that we are right now, 2023, in the middle of a messy transition out of the patriarchy. And we don't know yet how the future will look like. But I know for sure it goes in the direction of diversity and inclusion, of partnership between the genders, of equality. And for that, we are all called to do the necessary inner healing world work so that we can be better leaders who don't put profit over people or profit over planet and you know, Gaia, Mother Earth, our planet is like our own body. And I know so many of my clients being close to burnout physically because they put their career above their own health. They sacrifice their health or their family or their private life on the altar of their career or just the usual patriarchal capitalistic busyness as a badge of honor. How are you, my dear? Oh, I'm busy. Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah. As if busyness is anything sexy or worthwhile. Yeah, it's horrible. It's soul sucking. Yeah. So if I could wave a magic wand, one would be to stop all busyness. And that brings me back to art. When I feel falling back into any kind of patriarchal busyness and action, 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 doing, 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 I stop now in my office, everything, and go into my art studio and paint. Because as soon I have a brush in my hand and my eyes are on the canvas and I don't control the movement and my eyes follow the brush and my brain follows what my creative muse is producing on that canvas, everything comes down and my whole body relaxes, my brain relaxes, and I switch the brain hemispheres from left brain to right brain. I activate my corpus callosum, so the middle part of the brain, which connects the two brain hemispheres, and I'm literally a different woman. I'm a different woman. I'm not any longer patriarchally driven, fear, pressured, busy, busy, busy. I'm reconnecting with my spiritual self, my aligned self, my higher self, whatever you like to call it. And that for me is something I want every leader to have the tool for. And it doesn't need to be painting. For some people, it's cooking. My second son, he's an amazing cook since he's 11 years old, better than I. And I see when he comes from school and is stressed and agitated, put him in the kitchen with, you know, especially baking and give him all the substances to bake some cookies. He doesn't need to eat the cookie to feel better. He needs the baking. He needs a creative creation. And that is what I hope through my work can bring into not only the corporate world, but everywhere so that people heal, be happy. I know it sounds so naive when I hear myself saying that, but I believe happy leaders are better leaders. And I also believe that a happy world is possible and that we have to work together. I could start crying now because this horrendous earthquake in Turkey and Syria killed so many people. The grief there, this is not just Turkey and Syria. I've never been to Syria and Turkey, but I feel the grief. And we all need tools to move through that collectively and not just, you know, produce something we can sell and make profit and forget people and the planet and our personal pleasure, to stay in the row of words with P. Yeah, instead of busy, I want people to feel the pleasure of being alive so that we can create a world after this patriarchal, messy time we are going through, which works for everyone. We are so rich. The world is so effing rich. I mean, Putin doesn't need to fight and conquer Ukraine. He needs to heal. I mean, that is what he needs to do. Yeah.
From your mouth to God's ears. Seriously, I could not agree more. I've been saying for years that if therapy would become something, you know, widely accepted or even legally necessary for certain people, the world would be so much better on so many levels. Yes, absolutely. And the therapy is not the only way of healing things. Hey, In the Arts and listeners, do you remember Mark O'Donnell from Pixel 2 Editions? He's been on the show in Season 3, Episode 7, and told us everything we need to know about giclée printing. And take my word for it, Mark and his team are the best in Southern California and beyond. I've been a client of Pixel 2 Editions since 2019, and I've been shouting about them from the rooftops ever since. Luckily, I don't have to do it anymore because I have a podcast. Despite being San Diego local, Mark and his team are working with some of the best photographers and artists from all states, including Clark Little and Kadir Nelson. And frankly, if you are a photographer or a digital artist, you don't need to be local to work with Pixel 2 Editions. Just use a file upload on their website for your heavy images and write down the specs. They can print small proofs for you on any substrate you want and ship them to you for free. And for my listeners, they offer a free 8x10 full image proof on metal. Just tell them that you heard about them on the podcast and they will take care of you. Let me tell you, their metal prints are amazing. Whenever I order mine, they fly off the shelves in no time. So I highly recommend you try it out. And oh, did I mention that they are a full service company? It means that they do everything from color correcting and printing to framing and shipping directly to you or your clients. So don't wait, go to pixel2editions.com, 2 is a number, and editions is plural, or call 858-549-7299. Again, pixel2editions.com, 2 is a number, and editions is plural, or call 858-549-7299. Say hi for me.
I remember once a mentor who failed coaching me in marketing and sales. I frustrated him and he frustrated me and he yelled at me, "Sylvia, you need to decide. Are you a businesswoman or a social worker?" And I yelled back at him through on Zoom, "I'm both." That's this right. Whole thing, either or, is part of the patriarchal logic.
Yes, yes.
But not either or.
We're all put in the box, like artificially created boxes for all of us. Like you have to name yourself the certain way. You have to have like a certain identification, or like it doesn't need to be that way. And I know I've been struggling with this as well, because my creative practice has never been about one subject or one style or something. So I would switch, and I used to joke about this ironically, that my longest series of work is 3.5 paintings, because I will get bored by the fourth painting and I will never finish it, and then I will switch to something else. And I thought that this makes me not the real artist, which is just makes me a human. I don't have to stick to one thing if my brain wanders and I get a joy from something else and I just start working on that. So yeah, I'm so with you on the same page about happy leaders and the collective healing. It's wonderful, and it's wonderful that you are actually, you know, one of the conduits who's making who's doing this work. It's amazing and very important work. But I was also going to ask you, so between your creative childhood and through your, I don't know, adolescence, some adult years when you have become a business coach, did you keep your creative practice as a hobby, or did you just reconnect with it during the pandemic when you did your certification?
Yeah, very good question. So in my teenage years, I was painting with oil, especially during the long summer school breaks. And where I grew up in Düsseldorf, we have a very famous art academy in Düsseldorf. And Joseph Beuys was big at the time when I was young, and he impressed me. He had the whole political notion that everyone is an artist. So, beloved listener to this podcast, if you have never looked or know anything about Joseph Beuys, please look him up. He, in the United States, he's famous for his happenings in New York, where he was stuck in a room for 10 days with a wild wolf and a rabbit or something crazy.
And I'll make sure to put the link in the show notes.
Perfect, perfect. So I wanted to study at that art academy. That was my big dream. And my naive teenage dream was one day I will go to Paris and be this bohemian artist living in a tiny one-room apartment on the Montmartre, beside the steps of Sacré-Cœur, and eat and drink in all the cafes where Cézanne and Monet have been, you know, all these kind of bohemian and artist lifestyle. That was my dream as a teenager. And I went to high school in my hometown, and I was always the best in class. So my intellectual, scientific brain was also very strong. And that's an issue when you are, as a child, good in everything. There is no clarity. What's your direction? And at the time, sadly, my parents, they loved me, but they didn't understand me. They didn't really understood what I was. So they couldn't support me in that decision. What do I do with my life after school? And so I was completely alone with that decision. And my parents, coming from the fear, from their PTSD, they wanted me to be safe. And when they heard that I want to study art, the thing which doesn't make any money, they were freaking out so much that I dropped my dream. I was so loyal. I loved my parents and still do so much that I saw, oh my gosh, if I pursue my dream, I might kill my parents. That is how it felt. They might have a heart attack, or they will not survive that. My mother will never sleep again because she will worry herself sick every night. She had these horrible bouts of anxious panic attacks and diarrhea. And so I thought, oh my gosh, no, I can't enjoy becoming an artist knowing I sacrificed my parents' peace of mind on the altar of my dream. So I dropped it and started the most boring, seriously, the most boring career you can imagine, which at the time was becoming a public servant at the German telecom and mail service before it became separated and privatized. Because that was something, a career path where literally your life was mapped out till you die. If I had stayed with that by the age of 26, I would have been what's the English word when you are for life safe to not be thrown out of your job. So I would have been a public servant for life, and my retirement, everything mm-hmm. would have been cared for. It was soul crushing. Oh my gosh. I was bored out of my mind. So I did that for 3 years, studied through, then paid, became an HR professional on a very high level in the hierarchy of that bureaucracy at 22, and thought, oh my gosh, this is my life is over. And in that time, I was not creative whatsoever. And do we have the time for a mini story of my big breakdown and breakthrough?
Of course.
Can I share that? Okay. Because this is so vivid still in my brain. In Germany, public servants, they wake up very early, you start early, but the advantage is you stop in the afternoon early. So you have literally the afternoon and evening off. So one dark, rainy, cold, miserable morning in my hometown, Düsseldorf, the alarm went off at 6 a.m., which for me and my body at the time was super, super early. And I remember I stumbled tired into my bathroom. The bathroom floor was super cold. It was in an old Patrizia building with bad heating. And I look up to brush my teeth. I look up into the mirror, and it was this epiphany, a super ugly face of an old, bitter woman was staring out of the mirror into me.
And you were in your 20s.
Yeah. And it was this face with the line, you know, these lines when a woman is really, really bitter, where her lips, everything goes down from her nose, mm-hmm. everything like an old prune or old lime. And I knew, oh my gosh, this is my face in 30 years, in my early 50s, if I stay in this career. I will end up looking like that, bitter, drained out of life, and just crushed. And I broke down literally on the cold bathroom floor, sobbing and crying. And that was my wake up moment. I got dressed, went back to the headquarters of this telecom center in my hometown, straight to my boss, and resigned on the same day. And 2 months later, I went back to university to study philosophy, linguistic, German literature, not art. I didn't get into the art academy. And I started also first to become a teacher. So to give my parents a tiny bit peace of mind, because obviously it was a bomb that exploded. My parents for a year were worried that I threw my lottery win of my life away. My whole environment thought that Sylvia went nuts. She lost it. She went completely crazy. I never, ever, ever regretted that decision. And especially studying philosophy fueled me with lots of inspiration. And studying German literature, Goethe, Schiller, Kafka, Hesse, Heinrich Mann. I mean, so I start from that on, my creativity started to reawaken. And then over the years, I dabbled into different techniques, but it was always more a tiny hobby. It was not liberated, and it was not connected with these deeper and bigger topics of healing oneself, healing the world, of helping others. That came much, much later. And then, long story, after switching degrees and getting married, I started my business. Then there was a time, again, I was dabbling in painting here and there. Then I became a mother, and you know that with your young child. I had two boys in very quick succession, 16 months apart. So there were a few years where I got disconnected from my own art, just playing with them, being crafty, etc., just being a mother, stressed out, sleep deprived, etc. So it was then my full liberation was literally during the lockdown 2020. I'm now 56, so at 53, literally the age of that face of the woman staring out of the mirror to me, I finally came literally full circle and became the artist I had wanted to become when I was a teenager. It took me from age 19, where I dropped the dream, till the age of 53. It's wow. Quite a detour.
It is, yes. And it's quite a story. Oh, my goodness. Well, again, this is a proof for everybody that never is too late to follow your dream. Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. Yes, totally. Beloved viewer, listener, if you ever think it's too late, here, Tib, and we will share in the show notes the link. When I have that thought for any project, oh, my gosh, I'm over 50, I'm too old, I go to the timeline of Louise Hay, one of my female heroes. Louise Hay, the best-selling author of the book You Can Heal Your Life, she founded the publishing house here locally in Carlsbad, Southern California, of Hay House, one of the biggest global publishers for transformational books, audios, oracle cards, etc. Her timeline is my reminder that it's never too late. Because she published You Can Heal Your Life in her early 60s. Her publishing house became famous in her late 60s. Her biggest successes and her rainfall of money was all in her 70s. So for me, her timeline, literally her life, her biography, is where I go to and remind myself, look at this. Sometimes it needs a lifetime of accumulated experience, healing, and wisdom to break through. And I don't say, beloved listener, you have to wait that long.
Absolutely
you
not.
You hopefully can learn from some of my mistakes and other older people's mistakes and do things earlier. But I'm now out of that paradigm. Yes, I'm 56, and this year I'm relaunching my business. I have invested right now into two trauma healing-based business coaches to help me get my glorious, messy, multifaceted creativity into a shape and form that is creating a business which is long-term supporting my private life and is profitable. So yeah, it's never too late. I'm starting over again. I rebranded in the 25 years of being in business over 7 times. And when I say rebranding, that means new messaging, new webpage, new corporate identity, new business card, new colors, new look, new everything, 7 times. And in the year 2020, when I became an intentional creativity certified teacher and Shiloh took the lid off my creative muse, I launched 5 businesses that summer alone, every 2 weeks. First, the coaching and art, then another web page with my print art. Another 2 weeks later, my wearable art fashion with a Canadian partner. 2 weeks later, my publishing house, where I publish multi-author books with women to add their stories to human history. And the fifth one then was focusing on online Zoom workshops to bring intentional creativity into the corporate world. So literally in the matter of 10 weeks, 5 businesses, 5 web pages, 5 different foci of niche and messaging, which is crazy.
You need a team of marketers to keep up with that, because I know from my marketing background that like 2, maybe 3, but 5 is a little too much.
Absolutely.
It's 1 too much.
Absolutely. And it was this kind of birthing, you know, I gave birth to several babies, and now I need to decide which one I nurture and how to merge them and give them, I love them all, and give them the right place. Obviously, I can't grow 5 businesses, but I can still love them and keep them alive. My wearable art fashion, for example, I buy gifts for clients there, or my family members, or my girlfriends. Not all businesses need to be money-making or profitable. As long as I have one which is profitable and makes me a living, the others can be fun projects as well. So again, beloved listener, this whole thing, you can only do one thing. It all depends on the context. It all depends on your intention and your goals. Yes, growing a business and really making a living from it, it's way easier to focus on one thing.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't mean you can't have other things. And if it's just for your own enjoyment. I love, for example, I do yoga on a yoga mat where a painting is printed on. I sold. So the painting is gone out of my life. It hangs at a client. But every time I do yoga, I move my whole body and look down in downward facing dog. I look down on one of my favorite paintings. And I got my printed yoga mat for my own art printing store, right? So it's all about love for me. As long you love something, go for it, do it, and just know its place. I'm not feeling guilty not to grow my variable art fashion business or my art print business. They are just there, and I use them for gifts for myself or others. And here and there, I make $20, which, you know, it's not, they're not about the money.
Yeah.
But still, they are an expression of my love to the world.
Yeah.
And what's to say about that, against that, right?
Well, I have a couple more questions for you.
Okay.
I think this might be a really good segue to actually talk about your intentional creativity practice. What is this about? I mean, this is the whole program. You got certified. You are a certified teacher. So what is intentional creativity? What goes into it, and how you practice it?
Okay. So intentional creativity, and these are now my words, which means our teacher gives us, you know, legal rights to then go with what she has created and make it our own. So I'm not quoting now. That's my disclaimer here, what I'm going to say. So intentional creativity, how I understand it and live it, is goes way beyond painting, way beyond art. It's a way of living. It's a lifestyle where I'm reconnecting with my inner muse. Someone might say your creativity, your divine spark. There are different words for that, what it is. And for me, that means being very conscious that throughout my day, this year, what we are doing is a creative act. We are creating a conversation, which turns into an online offering, a podcast others will consume. So we are in a co-creation here. And living intentional creativity means that throughout the day, I have moments of conscious pauses. So as I said, I'm training myself not to go into busyness. I'm creating lots of short pauses. For example, when I go into my office and sit down and I see in my calendar Zoom call so-and-so comes up. So I take a pause and become present to what's my intention with that Zoom call. Or here today, what is my intention with our podcast? You didn't give me anything to prepare. We didn't decide about a topic for today. I didn't send you questions I wanted you to ask me. So I didn't know. So my intention was literally, I still made one, even though I stepped here into this big space of unknown with you. My intention was to be open, flexible, unattached, to allow whatever serves our beloved listeners to the most to come through me, to be just a conduit to whatever serves. And this is how I am here. So I'm sitting here without a plan, without pre-scripted questions and answers, and yet I'm sitting here intentionally. I'm not just, you know, falling to my chair sloppily and enjoying our nice connection and blah, blah, blah in here with you. I'm intentional. I want that my voice, my energy, my words, I don't even know what I'm going to say in the next seconds, that they are of service, that they are of value, that they empower the listener. So intentional creativity is a way I do now everything. Do I have days where I'm less intentional? Yeah, I'm very sensitive after, this would be a different podcast, after going through a huge health crisis and changing my diet and living very healthily. If I have now a days, let's say I eat a bad dinner and I have a bad digestion and bad night, the next days my energy is lower and immediately my capability of being very conscious and intentional throughout the day is simply lower because my energy is lower. Living intentionally needs energy. So I'm not perfect. I'm not living a perfect life from some kind of external measurement perspective. But for me, it's my perfect life in its messiness, in the amplitude of one day I'm more intentional than on others. And that's part for me of being human. So, and in that lifestyle, we learn a ton of tools in the different programs with Shiloh. And some I teach, some I use for myself, and some flow practically into the coaching, which here obviously on a podcast, I can't share here 3 years of studying with Shiloh Sophia. But there are little things. For example, the permission to draw and doodle just absolutely more, which reconnects me with my early childhood, where I literally doodled myself out of my bubble of doom. Or in my coaching, I always, even back in Germany, was known for using a big easel poster board when I do coaching sessions in person or later over Zoom with camera, I was always drawing and doodling and reflecting what my clients were saying, like translating, listening to them and translating it to an image, sometimes even of their thoughts, an abstract image, how different thoughts they just shared with me are connected. And I will never forget a client of mine, probably 10, 15 years ago, that was before I learned intentional creativity. I was living intentional creativity without knowing that term, or before I officially learned it. I remember my client said, "Wow, Sylvia, just looking at your easel poster here through the camera on my screen here on the computer, I can see now my own thoughts. I can see now how that is connected with this. And I feel that something is already shifting in me, Sylvia. And you have not even really started our session. I'm just talking and you are drawing and I'm seeing what you're drawing and I feel things changing." And this is a tiny bit paraphrased, obviously not 100% the quote, but something along those lines that female executives shared. And that's the power. That's the power of when you are intentional creative, and it doesn't matter if you are drawing, if you're painting, if you're baking like my son, if you, my husband is a gardener and a handyman and updating our house. He, for example, in the moment, he creates a new fireplace, completely new, deconstructed, and a new living room floor and everything. He transforms that shape. He is not trained officially intentional creativity, but he lives it. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have married him. He's so evolved and clear and conscious what he's doing. And he's not creating just a nice fireplace. He is creating a space aligned with our values, our tastes, our shared taste and design, a space for a vision how we both want to live. We love dinner parties. We don't like to go out. We don't like noisy, big sports bars with TVs and things like this. We don't like big gatherings. We like 6-8 people around a table and eating over hours and having deep philosophical discussions. And for that, he's creating now the perfect space. So intentional creativity for me is an evolved way of living, where you step completely out of your own inner victimhood to your own ego, where you just fundamentally step out of fear of not being good enough and being something you need fixing and working on, into, hey, I'm human, I'm created by who knows what, nature, the universe, God, whatever you like to call it. And the one thing I have in common with that, what created me, is creativity. I have this universal divine spark and I live from that. And everything else can, I don't use the word, just step aside. Because seriously, when you are creative, fear falls away by itself. Of course I have fears. Of course I worry about money, or I worry about the safety of my children, or my mother is now a widow, my father is died, and my mother is with advanced dementia in a nursing home in Germany, which is not my favorite way of, it's not aligned with the vision I had for her old age and how we live. Of course there are things I worry or I have fears attached, yet when I live creatively in that moment, fear has no space. When you are creative, it's like when you fill a moment with creativity, fear has no space. It's the same with love. If you fill a relationship or a situation with love, fear has no space. So instead, in the past, I tried, you know, 20 years ago to fix my fears, to overcome my fears, to be less anxious, blah, 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 and created more pressure and blamed myself when I was scared or anxious. Now, when I'm anxious, I go to my art studio, grab a brush and put some dots on a canvas and focus on being creative, and poof, just poof, the fear is gone without deprocessing and 100 hours on the couch with a therapist or whatever, right? Beloved listener, live creatively and intentionally, this combination, because creative, we sadly, I mean, as a side note, we are always creative. Sometimes we just create conflict.
We'll wrap it up, but thank you so much for your time today. We were talking about it since November. So I'm really, and we were scheduled a few times, and we almost did not record because I lost my brain somewhere at the beginning. but I'm so glad we did it, and I'm so grateful for your time today and for being open and flexible and sharing your story and sharing your creativity and important messages, because we all need to hear that. We all absolutely need to hear that.
And I thank you, gorgeous, because you create a beautiful listening space. I mean, I listened to some of your other episodes, so I sort of knew that you will do that, but I didn't know what to expect and how it will feel for me. And for me, it's a total gift you gave me and the listener by your space of listening, because you slowed us down. You slowed me down. You hopefully will slow down the listener. And because this is stopping the busyness. This is already such a beautiful gift you give all of us through your podcast, to cut through this noise everywhere and the busyness. I mean, I can't stand podcasts where people just rushed hectically yell at me some kind of business pitch and slogan, and in, you know, 15 minutes, 25 steps to success are communicated. So for having a real conversation here, you and me, that was a serious, beautiful, deep gift for me. And I hope, beloved listener, you experienced and received that as well. And if you do, please leave Galina a message and support her podcast, because we need you, Galina, to keep up this work you're doing. As you said, your mission, so that artists don't feel alone around the world. And I hope that not only artists, and that other people's listen too. So beloved listener, if you're an artist, share the podcast beyond your artist circles, because we artists, I believe, we are one of the groups of the most powerful change makers, change catalysts in the world. And I think too many people still think that art is just beautiful or nice or decorative and hangs at the wall, which is so not what art is about.
It's not.
So the artists were always, through human history, the mavericks, the what's the English word for the role at a queen or kingdom's castle? The jester, that's the word. The jester, the one who can speak truth to power. And I think we artists, we are that. We are jesters. We need to speak truth to power. And we all do it in our different style and different ways. So yes, thank you, Galina, for this beautiful conversation today.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you, Sylvia, for your support. And for you, everybody, go to the show notes at the intheartscene.com. There will be a full blog post with Sylvia's information, her bio, because there's so many things that we didn't touch on. Some of her work, if she will be willing to share, I'm sure she will. All the links and references, how to find her, how to get in touch. I don't know. Well, let's all get together and have a big workshop with Sylvia. Why not? Seriously.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
So yes, go there. Find everything. Click the links. Get in touch with Sylvia. Show her support, show me support, because I love doing it and I want to continue doing it. And we'll see you next time in the art scene. It has been another episode of In the Art Scene podcast. If you liked today's conversation, please give us a good review on Apple and go listen to other great stories. Check out our website, intheartscene.com, or follow us on Instagram at intheartscene for more content. If you are a creative, and you want to share your story, shoot us a message from the website or DM us on Instagram. Look forward to seeing you next time in the art scene.